Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back to the French Rugby Podcast with me, Tim Groves, and ex-Scotland international and adopted Frenchman, Johnny BT. We'll be casting our eye over Toulouse's epic win over Quins in the Champions Cup semi-final, which was every bit as entertaining as we thought it would be, as well as the other semi-final a little bit, Croke Park 2, and an agonising defeat for Clermont in the Challenge Cup semi-final. Plus, we'll have a look ahead to how Toulouse and Leinster match up against one another in the final and look ahead a little bit to a massive weekend in the top 14 with some huge games coming up this weekend in relation to the race for the top six. First though, Johnny, we'll come to the rugby and your trip to Toulouse at the weekend, but been a bit eventful since you got back. Am I right?
For those of you that are expecting an in-depth and detailed podcast, stop now. Yeah, it has been, mate. We had a little bit of a calamity just before I left. So oldest versus youngest, number one versus number three child. Lockie and Finn were having a bit of a royal rumble. There's been a bit of a broken foot. We've been back and forth to A&E. We're Tuesday morning now. So there was no proper break on Friday morning, but he can't walk, can he, the youngest? So he's now in a plaster cast up to his hip. Looks like something out of the medieval times that I used to get when I was his age. So yeah, it's been a bit of helter-skelter in A&E, but yeah, he's safe, mate. No, he's fine. He's absolutely fine.
He was refereeing or supposed to be refereeing while this scrap was going on?
Well, I think the issue was there was no referee. There was no supervision. I think we were in the middle of an apero with friends while they were having that. I don't know if it was tackling practice. I don't know what it was, but they've come off a bed and the foot doesn't work, mate. That's all we know. So we're hoping that, and I mean the timing, you could not write this. So what are we, Tuesday? We got the May holidays starting tomorrow. So the kids are all off. So we're away camping, mate. It's 27, 28 degrees Wednesday to Sunday. We're booked into a campsite. He's up to his hip in plaster. I mean, you couldn't write it.
It's like a permanent holiday in France, isn't it? Schools. You've just been on holiday, haven't you?
May in France is, and again, I didn't really get to exploit this when I was playing because they don't apply to you, but public holidays in May in France, pretty much a big reason to come over here and just work in France. It's absolutely exceptional. So that's it. You have a thing called Le Pont, which is the bridge. So you have Wednesday and Thursday off. And then if you plonk one of your official days off on a Friday, it means you get 5 day holiday. So yeah, take advantage of these loopholes. Welcome to France. May, not much gets done. You got to say in August, not much gets done in France either. And yeah, it seems a bit silly as we were away in April just 2 weeks ago, but mate, take them while you can. That's what they tell me. So we're away to a campsite in Biscarrosse, which is a firm favorite with the family. What we're going to do, fuck knows, because Finn is going to be attached to one of us 24/7. We've got him a buggy. He's 3.5. He's nearly 4. We've had to get him a buggy. And at the minute, he seems quite content. But when he sees his brother and sister go off to the swimming pool, they're off down the flumes and they're off making mates, kicking a football. Mate, I don't know how we're going to get through it. Dolipran. What's Dolipran back home? Calpol to the max with a mix of Haribo. We'll get him through. But yeah, it's been an eventful few days.
When you said buggy, of course you mean buggy, pram. I thought you meant golf buggy. You're not going to golf that, buggy, mate. Okay.
It's a different budget.
And how is French A&E? Because obviously you can sit there for hours over here without wanting to get political. Is French A&E quite quick or were you there ages?
It's unbelievable. the healthcare system in this country, if you want to break your leg somewhere, come do it in France. Not that you want to break your leg, but mate, the whole thing, the service, the care, exceptional. The French healthcare system is world-class.
And in between that trip to A&E and when he actually did it, so you just left him for a few days. Toulouse, was it good? Good trip?
Yeah, forgot about that. We'll have to pay for the medical bills. It was. Part of the TNT team for the weekend, which was great also because with all the TV teams now, it's like one big team. So you've got the Bayern team. So you've got Xavier Garbajosa, former Toulouse centre. You've then got the French TV team. So you've got Dimitri Yashvili. You got ITV. So you had Flat. So you had Benji Kayser. And I was there with Ben Kay, with Nick Mullins. So mate, it's just nice to catch up. It's a good social and you're 100% lucky just to be there and to call a game. You're essentially paid to go and watch a game of rugby that most people give the left arm to go to. I was going to say left leg and then I thought of Finn. I thought I should change that. But that's it, mate. Incredible weekend. It was a bit different because it was at the stadium, which is the biggest stadium in Toulouse. They weren't at Ernest Wallant. They were at the football stadium. But yeah, epic game of rugby. Weather was terrific. 25 degrees, perfect conditions. Jouer, both sides absolutely going at it, hammer and tongs, some wonderful rugby played, and Toulouse go through. So, no, it was a great weekend and a great spectacle for the competition as well, which has come under a bit of flack for format and different elements over the past few weeks and trying to renegotiate a TV deal. But the product and the on-field stuff at the weekend was top class.
And for those that weren't fortunate enough to be there, talk us through the atmosphere. And you mentioned the stadium because you saw, which happens at almost every French ground, the sort of walk to the stadium outside, which looked quite cool. And I understand, it was funny, Joe Marler and Danny Kerr walked off on their own, off the bus, through the kind of baying Toulouse mob and got shouted at and et cetera, et cetera. And allegedly Danny Kerr forgot his bag or something, and that's why that happened. But it did look like they were just trying to milk it, both of them.
Doesn't sound like them. It's great. And again, Toulouse at home, they do it really well in that they employ, there's a DJ. Normally there's like 4,000 or 5,000 people that rock up and queue the sort of tunnel entrance to welcome the players into the ground. This weekend, because even more people at the ground, it got up to like 10,000 people. So there was a piece with Sarah who was doing for TNT. She was presenting to camera and she can't hear herself.
No.
The volume of noise with the DJ, with the people, the racket they're making, the sort of anticipation ahead of the game, it's very cool. And again, that's me as a former player who have experienced some wonderful atmospheres in the past, but you're there, you've got goosebumps. And I dragged down Ben Kay last week to come down and just enjoy it, because when you drink that in, it 100% adds to the game day experience. It makes you feel like you want to be a player again and you realize how lucky the boys are that they have that reception coming into the stadium. So very cool if you're the home side. I imagine a little bit intimidating if you're, you know, polite British, which is very, you know, different in the way games are received back home and different for the Quins boys coming in and walking through it, especially for Danny and for Joe, who might have got a bit of jip, who knows. But yeah, like terrific build up. And then the actual game itself, when we got down to it, was pretty special.
And we saw that entrance with Sarah. Yes, you say she was struggling to hear herself speak, but managing to reflect that it was very exciting. After that, we saw your piece with Antoine Dupont. We mentioned it a little bit last week and you sort of gave us an insight into what to expect. Did you have some nice compliments on it? Because he did come across as a very, well, we know, but his English was very good and he was very calm, composed, as you'd expect.
Yeah, and he was smiley. That was the other bit I wanted to get across, is he's a happy character. And sometimes on the field, we spoke about the coolness that he gives off, but actually off the field, you know, he's a happy-go-lucky, jovial, like driven at the same time, but he's a really nice character. So yeah, you can still, if you go to Rugby Pass TV, you can watch that there. Or if you go to, I think TNT, you've got it on their YouTube, you can watch it there as well. It's only 5 minutes, but there'll be lots more coming out in drips and drabs because we spoke for about 35, 40 minutes in the end. But mate, just great to have him. I think great for him to sort of expose himself as well to an English audience, people to get to know his personality and engage with him even more. Because obviously in France, he's so sought after and everyone wants to speak to him. And now it's a sort of global audience that he is a little bit happier to engage with and open up to. So it was very cool. Hopefully it was well received. And hopefully it will be the first of a few more that we get to do together.
He didn't disappoint on the field either, as if he was ever going to, but a couple of tries in that first half. And I was looking up, I mean, he'd only scored he has only scored one career hat trick, which I suppose that's not what he's supposed to do, score hat tricks, but just the influence that he has on games. It almost surprised me that he's only scored one career hat trick.
I guess, and at times the game looks so easy for it. And so you'd expect hat tricks. I mean, how often do scrum halves get hat tricks?
Yeah, not very often, do they? Yeah.
Well, I'm like, you're thinking, you know, when Damian Penno or, yeah, he's a total extraterrestrial. So you'd expect him to be scoring five regularly. But he does so much in creation and assists and finishing things. He's a freak show. We all know how good he is. But what really surprised me was the sort of ease, the tries, basically just picking up and dotting over because of the pressure, because of the breakouts, because of the quality of the other boys around them, to put him in such an easy position. All he had to do was finish, which I guess is almost how wingers get their try, right? Without shitting on wingers.
One of them that he picked up, he did just pick it up and die over, but he'd run 100 yards and it looked like he was jogging.
His work rate and his acceleration, if you go back and look at that clip, to get into the position, to be there first in support, and I say the easy bit, pick the ball up and dot it down like it's a piece of piss. But his work rate and his speed, if you look back at his acceleration to get there, I mean, we're talking he's from a different world. He is so quick. He is so quick. And I think people forget he could quite easily be on the wing with how quick he is and how explosive he is. But what really impressed me, S's general play, his kicking game, his distribution, his ability to get himself out of tricky situations, whether it's a ball that's tapped back from a line out, to squirm out, to fend, to get them back on the front foot when he's got no right. Any other scrum half would get ragdolled and taken back 15 metres. Was phenomenal. What can you say? That the boys around him created such wonderful opportunities, whether that was from outstanding work at line out, turning over ball, whether it was line breaks, whether it was offloads. I mean, they really did put together a bit of an all-star show. And they just get quick, go forward ball so easily. They generate something out of nothing. And it's actually been interesting as well. Being at training last week, and I was at one maybe about 3-4 weeks ago as well, the work they do, and I'm not sure if this was shown in the piece, but the work they do to wriggle out of two-man tackle situations and extend a hand up into the air, almost like you're raising your hand in class, and pop an offload out. And it's not really, when I played, that wasn't really something you did because you're always taught to fight to get to deck and recycle the ball. Whereas these guys, like Manny Miafa, you're like, mate, if you can get a mitt out and get an arm free and get it 3 meters in there, who's going to stop you? And how many offloads does he manage to get away? In a two-man situation, draws two people in, offloads, and that's just what they do. They create continuity, and it means it's so hard to set as a defense and get any sort of dominant tackle. That allows them to get over the gain line, free the ball again, and create these half line breaks, and it's absolute chaos. But it's so much fun to watch and so much fun to commentate on. And that's where a man like Antoine, on the end of it, he just makes it look so easy.
Yeah, and we spoke about last week the fact that it was sort of the English great entertainers against the great entertainers in Toulouse. It didn't disappoint. Jouer everywhere. In a way, though, it was slightly the case for Leinster Northampton as well. You had the favourites, the big favourites, the home side in the big stadium, going out into a significant lead. And then it'd be unfair to say taking the foot off the gas, but I guess it is tricky when you go quite far up to keep the foot on the throttle, you know, throughout. The opposition's always going to have a spell.
They are, but they've gone to Bordeaux in the quarters, and they've pit them by a point by playing some exceptional rugby, by not being cart-horsed physically, by standing up at scrum time. Again, like Finn Baxter and Collier, the work they get through, those two. Like, I think Collier is going to be outstanding in CAS next season. Baxter is going to be your starting loose head for England anytime soon. So the penalties they churn out, they managed to check momentum, and it meant that Toulouse couldn't get that foot on their throat and really slay them, which meant it was super interesting. Tyrone Green in backfield as well, for the tries they generated. I mean, he can conjure something out of absolutely nothing. And walking touchside pre-game, he's not the most physically imposing or biggest bloke, but his acceleration, his decision-making, his ability to, again, create something out of nothing, offload, find an overlap, he could be a real star. And we were speaking pre-podcast, he is South African, but qualifies for England fairly soon. There's another one. So you've got Baxter, is probably going to get called up. Green out backfield, who would be sensational in France. You think about dry running rugby with the sun on his back. He kept them in the game. It wasn't really, you know, Danny Kerr or Marcus Smith, or it was excellence from backfield. It was grunt up front, physicality. They stood up as well. So Quins were well worth their ticket in that semi and played exceptionally well and fought back. Really, they were well within a chance of winning that game. If a couple of, we'll talk about discipline bits and things that happened during the game as well. I think a couple of other things, if they'd been noticed, could have really helped Quinns to challenge even further, and Toulouse could have been punished.
There are a couple of Quinns uncapped stars. Toulouse only got one uncapped player in their starting 15, but he happens to have been pretty much the best player on the pitch in the quarterfinal and semi-final, arguably. There have been other candidates, but Paul Cost, everyone is talking about him now.
He's a freak. And the producer from TNT wrote to me pre-game and said, "Ah, oh, Paul Cost, is he a weak link? Is he any good?" And I was like, you have no idea. So people back in the UK who haven't seen much of him, son of Arno Cost, who played for France, played for some big clubs in France as well. And they actually did a really nice piece in French about Arno's got loads of footage of filming Paul as a youngster. Absolutely mad, hyperactive kid getting into the game. And he's got footage of him scoring tries. And it's all age 6-7, him offloading, going between defenders, wriggling a way out for a guy that is undersized, wriggling his way out, finding an offload. There's then angles and film of him, not showboating, but swallow diving to score tries. His dad bollocking him on camera whilst filming. Score normally. You don't do that. And for anyone that watched his under-20 World Cup performance, where he again was able to conjure like a magician, something out of nothing over and over again. I think it was against Ireland. He set up their try that essentially set them on track to win the competition. And then his work defensively, his counter-ruck, his ability to drive people off the ball, his tenacity in defense, the way he chops, he gets back to his feet. He's another center. We've seen Deporter come in and get capped recently, but there's another one, summer tour to Argentina. I'd be taking him. And he's keeping other top-class internationals out of the side. And he's got a partnership now with Peter Aki, who is so robust and destructive at 12. Paul Cost long-term now looks like he is going to be the 13 to watch for Toulouse and potentially a star in the making for France as well.
Life is full of awesome what-ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
You mentioned a couple of decisions before, so we should come to that. I suppose the one to start is Joe Marler's petulance. I mean, you can't really
do anything about that. That's not the one to start. Well, let's talk about it anyway. But Joe has essentially, he's been picked up on the ref mic calling Tomo Ramos a little bitch and slapping him on the back of the head. But essentially, there's 2.5 minutes left to play in the game. Harlequins didn't have much of a chance of winning the game. They had to score 2 tries. But with clipping him around the back of the head, you essentially just forfeit the semi-final.
After that.
Yeah. So, I mean, all the work that's gone on, he's come on off the bench. He's played 15 minutes. You're like, come on, mate, just keep a lid on it. I know you might get irritated, but you just forfeited your side of the game and given them absolutely no chance. It was uphill anyway, but, and I know he apologized on social media afterwards, but you're like, come on, buddy, you're better than that. So that was one bit right at the end.
That one's really clear cut. So you're right. Maybe that's not the controversial one. It's just an obvious point to make. He doesn't do that. And then you never know. We might have a grandstand finish. We didn't get it. I'm assuming the one that you think deserves a bit more chat, is it Entermax tackle on Esterhazy? Because, I mean, that's borderline. But there was a lot of chat back in the UK about the fact that we didn't see more angles of that. We didn't see more replays, whereas obviously we did for Jack Walker's yellow card.
I don't know what you saw at all. I don't know what was picked up, but live it looked and it sounded horrible. So it sounded like a big collision. And Esterhazy isn't the type of guy to go down without being touched fairly heavily. So live it looked poor. We saw one half replay and I thought that has to be flagged by the TMO. But the TMO's missed it. So I don't know what else you can say. The TMO's within his rights to ask for more replays and for something to be shown again. But he hasn't asked. You've also got an independent doctor that can come in and ask for Andre to come and be examined for an HIA, but that didn't happen either. But live, it looked poor. And that was the one element or one decision that I thought could have had a huge impact on the rest of the occasion, and it wasn't picked up at all. So I think that Roman Entermac, again, wonderful to see him back to form, wonderful to see him in a team that's singing and distributing and creating so much for his side. But again, I don't know if there's going to be a sighting. We're now Tuesday morning. I haven't seen anything come out, but I thought that certainly could have been looked at again. It was high. It was either shoulder to head or head on head. And that would have had a definite impact on the rest of the game.
Yeah, interesting that you say that because, again, it might be slightly one-eyed, the coverage in the UK, in that the French TV directors do get a lot of flack saying, we only saw one half replay, as you say. But the TMO should have access to more and he should be calling
that's
for
his
that
job.
To come in. And the TMO is obviously Irish.
And that's his job. And he's independent and he's there for one reason and one reason only. And that is to reinforce the laws of the game. So he's missed it. And again, maybe the director has missed it and it hasn't been picked up by him. It's nobody's fault. But just when so much is placed on these decisions. And again, there was another one in Clermont Sharks that stood out massively that I didn't understand, but that was one. So the TMO and the referee have missed it live, and it just slips through the net, whereas Jack Walker's clear out on Dupont is picked up, it's in front of the referee's nose, it's looked at, and yes, it's replayed on TV. And I don't think that we can, is that a thing? Do you think that's a thing that TV, because I know Ben Kay next to me said that during the game, French TV directors, but is that something that you genuinely think comes into the game, or do you not think they're just concerned with putting the best images out there possible? And then if they see something that is flagrant, they then repeat it.
Hugo said something as well, and you could get into some trouble, certainly suggesting that whether they're French or whether they're English or whether they're Irish, accusing any one particular nation of being biased and showing replays only that suit their team. I'm not sure if that is the case or not, but I can certainly report that people do have that feeling in England or in the UK. People do have that feeling that French TV directors don't show certain replays because they think it might go against their side. That is a general feeling among rugby fans.
Wow.
But, you know, there's loads of other feelings among rugby fans that aren't necessarily correct, but that is one that is out there. I think it's more so that French TV directors probably don't show as many replays of those controversial incidents as UK directors do anyway, to be honest, because they much prefer showing arty shots of all sorts of different things and crowd and all sorts. Whereas you've got someone like Hugo, someone like Ben, someone like Austin, they're always talking about those incidents and the director is in constant communication with them. They're calling in replays and we don't see that many shots of like fans and arty stuff in the UK. You see replays of the latest incident.
Interesting.
And it's like accusing a referee of, like there was a storm in England about Carl Dixon as a former Harlequin scrum half refereeing Harlequins and not sending Danny Kerr off last week. Like, what are you supposed to say? I mean, people did say he shouldn't have been put in that position. He shouldn't be refereeing a Quins game. And that's probably a fair point, but you can't accuse a referee of deliberately making a call. Equally, you can't really sit here and say
a French TV director has deliberately not shown a replay of that Untermack tackle. It's just a feeling over here that it happens again and again and again. And you can't, I don't know whether that's accurate or not. It probably isn't, but people have that sense. My sense, to be honest, is that French TV directors, I'm not saying they're bad, but they do an interesting job. You see a lot of shots of things that you're like, oh, interesting that you've chosen to show that just generally.
A slow exhale and lips. Yeah, exactly. That's the favourite. They absolutely love it.
Speaking of people who were on the wrong end of some big hits, did you see Blair Kinghorn's nose?
I saw what's left of it. Half of it's around his face.
Poor Blair.
Poor boy. I having been in that situation, what's worse is the aftermath and having the doc trying to put it back, which typically is they just grab your nose and then try and bring it the right way back around your face with their two fingers, which is not nice. So didn't look good. I also really loved the FaceTime screenshot with Adam Hastings that's doing the rounds on social media, the pair of them. Blair looking like a mummy, probably with a tampon up each nostril. It's just one of these things, isn't it? Occupational hazard. Embrace it. He's a fullback though, so he might be a bit more touchy than the rest of us up front. We've all got schnozzes half around our face, but he'll get over it. He's got misses. They're settled down. They're happy together.
He doesn't need his looks. Is that what you're saying?
He doesn't need them. Mate, what's worse? With David Flatman, we were sat having lunch and he was telling a story about one of his first pro games. This is before Blair gets mangled. One of his first professional games playing against Frank Tournaire.
Yes, I think I've heard this story, yeah.
Oh my God. And just finished the game. And I think, so Flats is loose head, 18 years old. His parents have come over to watch the game. Frank Tournaire, tight head. Fabian Palouse behind him. Calafano. Yannick Brew, and he just got absolutely busted up. Eye socket broken, palate broken, jaw broken. He said he had the feeling that all of his teeth were starting to separate. He said he got on the plane and felt like his eye was popping out. And he said that after that game, he'd just been absolutely taken to pieces by Frank Tournaire, filled in every sense. And Frank bounds into the changing room and his white wife runs with a can of beer to try and drink it with him after the game. And I don't think Flats could bring himself to have a beer or share a beer. He's in shell shock. There's been worse. Typically it's up front, so I'm sure Blair will recover. And Flats is a handsome boy, so I'm sure Blair will follow suit. You'll be absolutely fine.
Those were the days. We'll come on to Blair a little bit more when we talk about the final and how that might pan out. Let's briefly touch on the other semi-final, Leinster-Northampton, because we had AB Zonder on last week. Turns out he knows his audience, Johnny. You thought, I'm going to put you out here. I'm not part of this. You thought it might be quite convincing, that one. But AB said it would be tight, and it was.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming. And as much respect as I have for Northampton, and I really love the way they play, I just thought in front of 80,000 in Dublin, the sense of occasion, the quality that we know Leinster have, which maybe isn't as strong as we thought it was, I thought they'd pile on a score. And they did. They opened up like a 15-point-ish lead, 14, 15, 16 points out, and they got out there and I thought, right, it's now game over, and it just didn't happen. Northampton chipped their way back into the game. Courtney Laws, he should play until he's 40 and he shouldn't drop down to Pro De Deux. I hope when he arrives in France, his side is not in Pro De Deux and they've been promoted to the top 14, because that boy belongs on the top stage. He's one of the best players on the field again and should still be playing for England, could probably do another Lions tour. He's a freak. But yeah, Northampton found a way to plug their way back into the game. And there's also a little bit of me, you know, with Jacques Nienaber coming in, defensive systems changing, and more importantly, the squad. And that it was actually Bernard Jackman that was speaking about this over the weekend, that there's a little bit of a frailty around, if you look back 2, 3, 4 years ago and the sort of depth and the bench they'd be unloading, the bench now for Leinster looks a little bit light, and there's a real decision to be made with, do they keep going with who they have, or do they bring back in James Ryan when he comes back to fitness, Ring Rose when he comes back to fitness, do they unload these guys and just bung them on the bench so that they've got a little bit more star quality when it comes to a final? Because I think they've been a little bit let down by the quality they have on their 23. Their starting 15 is magnificent and they're so well oiled, but there are definitely parts of their game that can be exploited. And I think when you look ahead to the Toulouse game, I mean, I always love the way Toulouse play, their attitude, their approach, and the way they set up. But you've now got that physicality, that ability to generate go forward and offload that we've spoken about against a different defensive setup that they maybe don't come up against in the top 14. Not many other sides blitz. Leinster now defend the way South Africa defend and have defended under Jean Gnabry. So they leave the 50-meter channels and they come up and they have two-man tackles and they blitz. And you saw the way they managed to contain La Rochelle, Skelton, Antonio, two-man tackles, the way they contested as well. So I'm really looking forward to this final. It's going to be, how does this Leinster defensive system and structure and blitz defense pin down a Toulouse attacking system that, yes, has the firepower, yes, has the carrying ability of La Rochelle, but also has nuance. And La Rochelle has nuance as well. They just didn't take the right options and execute against Leinster, but can Toulouse do it? So Toulouse have had a bit of a checkered recent past and history against Leinster. They've become unstuck a couple of times, but I'm looking forward to this one. I think that they've been in so many semis and they've had so much pain that there's a real motivator. And Ugo Mola spoke this week about how this generation, this team and its arrival, this is their time. And so I think the final is going to be an absolute cracker. Like, and how they play, how the game unfolds. You know, speaking to Antoine earlier in the week, they want to add that sixth star to this journey. They want to be the side that makes history and marches on. So yeah, no time now like the present.
Yeah, that Leinster depth you mentioned might be a little bit better next season. RG Snyman, Geordie Barrett.
They're not going to be short, are they?
Yeah.
And that's with Ringrose coming back. That's with, I mean, mate, they are outstanding. But like at this moment in time, are they a little bit lighter than they have been in the past? And I think they have really managed to contain Toulouse in recent seasons. But is this final because of where... And again, we saw, I'm not sure if you saw the minutes played stat. Did you see that pick up?
Yeah, I did. And I saw a bit of criticism of it in the Irish media, as you'd expect, just saying they didn't factor in the Six Nations minutes into that, which obviously, because Northampton have only got a few internationals, then if you'd have added that in, it would have evened itself out. I don't know.
Yeah, would it? But historically, they're just way better managed, aren't they? Like, you can't deny that they play fewer games. They just do. They're primed and looked after by their federation, and that's quite right. They do it their way, and their way has worked very well for them. But yeah, it's interesting. I love it. And also, it comes down to, like, you speak to Antoine, how he's been managed as well, with Sivens, with the workload, with top 14, with everything he's expected to be involved in and be exceptional. You kind of get the feeling they've had enough and they want this year to be their year and they want that sixth star. So yeah, I think it's the final that it's going to be sensational. It's two of the best sides in the world going at it, and it should be a cracker.
Just before we get into a little bit more detail on the final and the matchups there, the French element of that semi-final at Croke Park was obviously Mathieu Reynal, and he has got a bit of stick for, well, I suppose his performance generally, but I would say that he probably refereed the breakdown how he and most French referees normally referee the breakdown. But that happens to coincide with the fact that most people's perception of Leinster is that they do get away with quite a lot at the breakdown. And there was obviously that key turnover at the end for Jack Conan that people are highlighting.
It's hard, isn't it? Because, like, having played against Leinster a million times, they get away with so much of the breakdown because they're coached very well and they're very cute. But it is what it is. I mean, it's an intimidating atmosphere. It's 80,000 people. That obviously gets to you as well as a player, as a referee. You can't say it doesn't. Like, we've all been there. And the one that did stick out was the last turnover for Conan, where you watch it back and it looks like he's got his forehead, his face, two hands, his knees, everything on the deck. But it's given and you move on. And again, these are the different things and interpretations that as professional players and coaching groups, we deal with every single week. We do our analysis on who is reffing us. Do they let the game go? Are they sticklers at the breakdown? What are they tough on? What do they not pick up on at all? And then you adapt and then you try and get away with as much as you possibly can. And that is the same for every side. And I think it looks like it's going to be potentially Luke Pearce in the final. Not sure if that's been confirmed or announced yet.
Yeah, we don't know, do we? I mean, the one thing you can say is obviously it's not going to be a French ref. It's not going to be an Irish ref. And that rules out most of them, doesn't it? I mean, you've got Nico Mashakeli, who's doing quite well at the moment, but I don't know if he would be given the biggest game in club rugby this side of the world. Luke Pearce is probably the obvious one, you would have thought.
Yeah, he's going really well, and I rate him. Every game that he, like, I enjoy his approach. He is not overly friendly. He's firm. He's not looking to be the center of attention. He just gets on and refs the game and enforces the laws. And that's what you want as a player and as a fan. So it'd be good to see him whistle the final. But yeah, the players have to adapt. And again, like the feeling of playing against the referee or even having the referee as an element in the game is not what you want. You want them there just to run things, to enforce the laws, and you hope that's what you get in the final. So yeah, there were a couple of bits, I'd say, for both Leinster and Northampton that were missed. But it happens. It happens in every single game, every test match that we play. There are bits missed by referees. You can't accept that a referee will not miss bits in a game. The glaring one was the penalty at the end. But yeah, during the game, get on with it.
And if we look ahead to the final then, it's their seventh knockout meeting, Leinster and Toulouse. Eighth final for both teams. Obviously, as you said, Toulouse looking for a sixth star, Leinster looking to even it up and get a fifth star. The first time they've ever met in a final, which is quite incredible.
That is incredible. I didn't realise it was the first time they've met. They met a heap in the semis then.
Yeah.
And I think that, not that it's bad blood, but I think there'll be a big sense of revenge for Toulouse as a motivating factor for these boys, and that Leinster have gone on and made finals, lost to La Rochelle, won others, but they've dumped Toulouse out of this competition. So I think this now, a neutral stadium, you got to think as well, the last couple of games they've played, they've been in Dublin, which has been very different, and it's been an away game. Whereas this now, you're going to London, you're playing an incredible stadium in one of the biggest games in the world. Who are favourites? I think if you go back historically, Leinster are favourites because of the head-to-head, but I just have a feeling that internally, I mean, it's stupid to say that they'll want it more because everyone wants to be a Champions Cup winner and they want to get that extra badge on their jersey, but I just feel that Toulouse, with the players and ability they have, I think they'll probably rotate a fair bit this weekend as well. They're playing against Stade Francais. They'll probably rest a few. They will try and wrap some people up and they will really try and go and get their sixth star. So I think outwardly, Leinster are probably still the favourites. But if I was a gambling man, which I'm not, I would place a buck or two on Toulouse. I fancy them to go on and win this one now. Knowing the players, knowing how they function, knowing how much they want it. And also, I guess there's a little bit of change in Leinster in that there's structural defensive systems, coaches have changed. Johnny Sexton's no longer there. They're still a very effective, outstanding outfit. And there's a few players short from who they'd like to have in their ideal 23. I mean, that might change over the next few weekends, but as things stand, I believe Toulouse can go on and win this final in London in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, I think Gary Ringrose and Hugo Keenan should be fit. Does that make a big difference? I mean, it does, obviously. Yeah, it makes them a lot stronger. Does it tip the balance in Leinster's favour? Maybe not, but it certainly makes... You want to see all the biggest players, the biggest names on the biggest stage, and it looks like they're going to be fit, yeah.
100%. And that's it. You want to be the biggest spectacle possible with the best players on show, and to create the best show possible. So you want the best players fit. So yeah, you want Ryan back there, you want Ringrose, you want Keenan, you want everyone. And as a player, you want to beat the best as well. Obviously, it's easier if there's a few key elements missing, but you want to say that you are able to beat the best on any given day. But yeah, obviously, Gary Ringrose, Keenan and Ryan coming back makes a huge difference to that 23.
And obviously, we know both of these teams like quick ball. The semi-final, Toulouse-Quins, was just jouer. No one could slow anyone down. Quins' mantra for the knockout stages travelling to France has been, chuck the bat at it, whatever, swing the bat.
And swing the bat.
And they swung the bat over and over and over again. And Jack Willis was saying their mantra for that semi-final against Quins was expect the unexpected, because, you know, Quins are going to try everything from everywhere. It is going to be very different against a Jacques Nienaber defence in the final. So it is almost like a clash of styles. And that speed of ball is obviously crucial to the way Leinster and Ireland play in attack. Toulouse couldn't slow Quins down. I think Quins' average ruck speed was well under 3 seconds in the opposition half at the weekend. So I suppose it's interesting to look at how much Toulouse play their own game and how much they look at Leinster, isn't it? Because if you're looking at it, you want to be slowing them down.
Yeah, but I think when you get to this stage, though, and weirdly, the old swing the bat mantra, but we spoke about it in commentary at the weekend, and you can't let your head go down because Toulouse have scored a try. And this is the same for Leinster. Like, Leinster are so effective and so efficient and so good at manipulating a gain line, then creating space and generating opportunities and then finishing. Like, look at James Lowe. He's finishing for fun because there's always a half chance created inside him by a well-oiled machine that achieves gain line, that creates a 3-on-2, that generates something, and he gets to finish. Another hat trick. It's freakish. So it's a clash of styles, but two styles that have to be appreciated. And mentally, you have to go into this game and say, you're going to concede. It's impossible that you don't concede or you nil a team at this level. You're playing against Leinster, you're playing against Toulouse, you're going to concede tries, but you have to fight fire with fire. And again, their fires are very different in style, in that Toulouse, you could argue, is a little bit looser and a little bit more based on offloads and destructuring play. Leinster's is very much about rhythm and the speed of ball, but off the deck. So different slightly, but you're still trying to achieve the same thing, is unsettling a defensive line, manipulating space, and finishing. But I honestly, I think the key is the defensive sets for Leinster. It's they have a new defensive system, which Nienaber said would take 15, 16 games to settle. They're now there. They're probably not as big and as physical as the Springboks, but they're very effective with their systems. But are they going to slip up once or twice? Are they going to overchase with a defensive set and create a dogleg because they're trying to blitz, but they haven't communicated properly? Toulouse haven't played against a blitz defense this system. Are they going to keep playing the way they want to play and just run up dark alleys and get blitzed off the field? Like, are they going to have to kick more in certain areas that they previously would have decided to run from? So there's all these little different nuanced bits that Ugo Mull on the coaching side will look at, come up with a plan of how to attack, where to attack from. You only have to look at some of the opportunities that, like, Antoine Dupont could have created by himself at the weekend. Like, for instance, if they had a scrum right, they stacked everybody left, and essentially you just left Antoine to run the blind side. Or they had a central scrum stacked right, and Antoine can create a 3-on-2 just because of the pace he has over 5-10 meters. There's all these little different things that will come into manipulating a different defensive structure on the opposite side. So, mate, I'm intrigued. I love this type of stuff. It's rugby chess at the highest level with the best athletes and the best coaches. So can't wait to see how they try to deploy their players on field, because they've got some of the best in the world. They've got the best talent at their disposition, and we're the lucky ones that get to go and watch it.
And on that, rugby chess and manipulating the different pawns, the coaches, selection was obviously interesting for Toulouse in the semi-final, Blair Kinghorn getting picked ahead of Thomas Ramos at fullback.
Yeah.
In a major final against Leinster that you assume is going to be very tight, and obviously Leinster a different type of team to Quinton's, does Ramos come in for his goal kicking alone almost? Would you pick Blair Kinghorn potentially on the wing?
I think there was different reasons to why Blair started. I think he's probably marginally better under a high ball as well compared to Thomas Ramos. We've seen at the World Cup, we've seen little bits of how he can be pressurized at fullback, but you got to think his kicking game is, you talk about Nienaber and 1 point wins. Well, you get Thomas Ramos in there and you nail those 2 points, you nail those 3 points when you get a penalty opportunity that maybe Blair has a slightly lesser percentage and he's likely to let a few more slide. So I would say Ramos has to start. I would also have Blair somewhere on the field, and I think he's been tremendous. I don't think his nose is going to, apparently initially thought it was going to be really bad and keep him out. Now they're a little bit more positive. So I think he'll be wrapped in cotton wool as well ahead of the last few weekends of rugby. So I think Ramos will come in and start, despite the fact that Blair was absolutely outstanding, had been phenomenal in the run-up with red-hot form-wise. Mull had spoke pre-game about managing a squad of that size and of that calibre, but ultimately you had to respect form and reward form, and Blair was chosen because he had been the best fullback. Again, he also spoke about a 23 finishing really strong because Quinn's between 60 and 80 minutes score the majority of their points late in the game. So there's all those different things to factor in. But you look at the quality of that bench, Marchand, Ramos, Richie Arnold, like they had quality at the weekend. They'll need that again come final time. But yeah, to go back to your question, I think that in a final, your first choice goal kicker needs to be on the field.
Let's get into some of the individual battles now. In fact, we could go through the whole team because, as you said, there is quality in every single position, and we could, probably should. Who's best out of Dupont, Gibson Park? Who's best out of Sheehan, Movaca? We could go through the entire team. Maybe we will. But two key battles, size is going to be a big one. Whether you like it or not, Toulouse are enormous. Leinster will have a plan for that. And therefore, Big Joe McCarthy against much, much bigger Manny Miyathu is going to be massive. And then less size-based, but Jack Willis has been enormous for Toulouse in these knockout stages. And he has brought a different element to Toulouse since, you know, Leinster were facing them a few years ago. So Leinster are going to have to combat him at the breakdown.
But I think he's brought a different dimension to himself as well, in that he came over as a poacher. Like, we knew him in the Premiership as a turnover, a jackler. But the amount of individual development we've seen for Jack has been ridiculous in passing ability, carrying ability, his ability to offload out of a tackle. And I think that goes down to the philosophy and approach they have at the club and the training sessions that they get through. You know, 15, 20 minutes at the start of every session is purely passing and offloading before you even get into anything else. So he has come on a huge amount since joining the club and added so much to himself as a player. So, mate, it's weird. Again, you could go down and pick like a, who would you rather
Let's
have?
Let's do it. Let's do it, Johnny. We're going to do it now.
I was going to say you could, but I'm not sure there's any point. Like, you go Dupont, Gibson Park. Jameson Gibson Park is the world's best scrum half. If Antoine Dupont doesn't exist.
Well, let's do 1 to 15, Joe. You've done the main one, but that's easy. Antoine Dupont over Jameson Gibson Park. Gibson Park is brilliant, but he's not the best player in the world. Cyril Bai versus Andrew Porter.
I'd have Cyril Bai.
I'm not offering an opinion here, but yeah. Piatta, Mavaka, Dan Sheehan.
Yeah, but then you could add Julian Marchand in there as well. Some people would have exactly. Do you know what I mean? It's almost that the talent that we've got that's going to be part of this final, you just have to stand back and appreciate it. That goes back to my chess piece in that they are so good.
So Dan Sheehan.
And then you throw them together as a team. Mate, Dan Sheehan is next up. But then Movaka at the weekend was... The fact that Movaka can keep Marchand out of the side. Do you know what I mean?
We'll give him that one because I reckon there's going to be more French by the time we get to the end of this. We'll give him Dan Sheehan, shall we?
Yeah.
Dorian Aldegheri, Tadhg Furlong.
I'd go Furlong.
Thibaut Flamand probably gets it against whoever he's up against. Ross Maloney was there at the weekend. James Ryan, if he's back.
Yeah, it's also been really nice to see Thibaut Flamand come into his own because he's been injured and... I mean, he's just such a good athlete. And at the weekend, like, come on, they don't make a cheeky turnover on Cunningham South, which created a try on the 5-meter line from a line out. It's just big players and big moments standing up and delivering things and changing a game. You had Piatto Movaka with a counter ruck again to create something. I mean, mate, they're just top class. You just have to appreciate these boys. And again, it might be in a final, they're maybe a little bit tighter, or you don't choose to expend so much energy in a counter ruck, and therefore you... I don't know, there's all these little bits, but their decision-making at the weekend was phenomenal. Movaka, big Manny Miyathu against McCarthy, like that's another great one. Everyone loves the clashes of big fives, big enforcers, big physical blokes that want to impose themselves on a game. So Manny Miyathu against McCarthy, looking forward to that one.
You're giving that to Manny, yeah?
Yeah, I am. But look, just again, top of the game, two of the best fives in Europe, and you hope those are two fives that are now going to have France against Ireland in a five jersey as well over the next 10 years. Like, exceptional talents, full of energy.
Francois Cross against Ryan Baird.
Francois Cross.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you... And again, so Francois Cross and the why, he's had to come more to the forefront since Anthony Joulon has been injured.
Work ethic. The amount of carries and tackles he gets through, let alone the amount of rucks he hits.
And how physical. Like, he's not as big a bloke as Anthony Joulon, but he's physical, like his timing as well, some of his collisions. Yeah, mate, he's top class.
Jack Willis against Josh Van der Fleer. Van der Fleer is obviously a former World Player of the Year, but I think on form, you'd have to say Jack Willis is the form manner out of the number sevens.
He's the form man.
Rumat against Doris. I mean, Rumat's playing very well, but...
They're different profiles. I love Caelan Doris. Caelan Doris is complete. I love Alex Rumat in that he reminds me of me, but he's just like bigger and better in that he's very technical. He runs a line out.
He loves
a line out. He runs a line out now for Toulouse, and he's probably got that role for the next 10 years. Doesn't shirk away from the physical elements, but probably not the most physical. But Caelan Doris is all action, mate. Like, robust, his footwork, his ability to bust the tackle, to jackal, to link, to offload, to distribute. He's Caelan Doris is the man.
We touched on the nines. I'm guessing you probably have to give both halfback slots to Toulouse, right?
Yeah.
Enough said. Matisse Lebel, James Lowe. I mean, it's tough to argue with James Lowe. I mean, as good as Matisse Lebel is.
James Lowe is very, very good.
And then the centres, I guess, like, that's the one where Toulouse, we spoke about them early on, Paul Cost and Peter Ekki are having phenomenal seasons, and they are understated. I mean, maybe not underrated among people who know what they're talking about, because we've talked about how good they are. But if you pit them against Leinster's first choice, if they're fit, Robbie Henshaw and Gary Ringrose, that's the Ireland. Well, it's not, because Bundiaki's not there, but you know what I mean? That they are top line. Yeah, you pick the beds out of that.
Mate, I reckon if Peter Ekki hadn't left New Zealand, he'd be a 50-cap All Black by now.
Mm.
Mate, he is that good. You cannot underestimate how much he contributes to that Toulouse backline in terms of communication, the second pair of eyes for Intermac, the vision, the ability to call things properly and time and execute well. Then his ability, we spoke about it in commentary, but if there's a 3-on-3 to have the ball, but to be able to stand up a man, eliminate somebody and offload, like he creates absolute chaos. So I think my 12, I would give to Pete, like Robbie Henshaw also, I think tremendous, top class, physical, but individual quality, I would say Peter Ekki wins that one. 13s, I would say Leinster have the edge in that I think Paul Cost is going to be phenomenal. I think he already is exceptional, but I think if he's starting in a 13 jersey in this final, they'll target him. They'll try and come down his channel. They'll test him. They'll throw different shapes. And I think that Ireland for years and Leinster for years have been very, very good as a team, very effective in as units. You see the drop-off now, like not having Sexton, there is a slight drop-off, but because the collective backline and the system is very good, they still function and they operate very well. So like I would say Peter Ekki gets the 12 jersey. I would say Ringrose has been on a different planet for Ireland over the past 2-3 years. So gets ahead of Cost at the minute in terms of experience and what he's done in the game. But again, that's a battle that when you talk chess pieces, getting to defensive edge and throwing different shapes at defensive setups and testing, I cannot wait to see how Leinster try and test Peter Ekki and Paul Cost and how they try and create a dogleg or disconnect between them and separate them and try and exploit how they defend. So, mate, looking forward to that battle. That should be huge.
The other wing spot, obviously at the weekend, it was Juan Cruz Malia, and for Leinster, it's Jordan Lama on that other wing. But I suppose you could argue if we're selecting a team for the final, you reckon you could have Blair Kinghorn on that wing and Thomas Ramos at fullback. So again, your choice. Jordan Lama, I suppose, is likely to be the Leinster winger. The Toulouse winger, I don't know. Could be Kinghorn, could be Malia.
Could be Lebel.
Very true. You could you could switch Lebel to the other wing and say, let's pick him.
I think Lama might have it, mate.
Okay. He's had a bit of a renaissance, hasn't he, this season, Jordan Lama?
He has. And again, it's kind of like the James Lowe. Does he appear better because he is part of a really well-organized unit? Whereas actually, in terms of individual quality, Blair Kinghorn or Juan Cruz Malia, in terms of X factor and points of difference, no, I've changed my mind. I'm going to lose.
Toulouse and one of those two. And then at fullback, I guess if we're putting Blair Kinghorn potentially on the wing, we're talking Thomas Ramos against, let's call it Hugo Keenan, because that's a more difficult call. If Hugo Keenan is fit.
Hugo Keenan's a freak show. Ooh. Mate, Hugo Keenan's a freak show. I think Hugo Keenan, in terms of the ground he covers, his backfield work is high ball work. He is so safe and he works so hard. And I think that's where Ramos is probably better at the fancier stuff, detecting space, kicking game, offloading, and kicking from tee, clearly. But Hugo Keenan, in terms of the work he gets through, the space he covers, he just doesn't slow down. He's so solid. Yeah, I think I'm going to go Hugo Keenan.
Do you want the scores on the doors?
Yeah.
9 Toulouse players, 6 Leinster players. So it wasn't too unbalanced.
Mm.
I can see how much you enjoyed that.
Yeah, I hated that. Saw how much you enjoyed asking.
It's not the kind of thing we would ordinarily do, but it'll give everyone a reason to disagree with you and slight you and say, you should have picked him.
To dislike me. Oh, well done, Tim.
Right, that's enough. That was a very detailed look ahead to a final, which is in 3 weeks' time, and we'll probably chat a bit more about it in a couple of weeks as well. Did you see,
Sharks Claremont at the Stoop very briefly, because we've had a lot of chat on Leinster, on Toulouse and on the Champions Cup semi-finals. But we chatted about Claremont last week and said we weren't really sure how seriously they were going to take it because of their situation in the top 14. But they took it pretty seriously and they came within a whisker.
They should have won it, mate.
Hmm.
Did you watch the game?
Well, no, I only saw bits. I was doing the other Challenge Cup semi-final.
They should have won that game. And again, I don't like talking about referee decisions, but here we are again. There should have been a penalty try. And have you seen this on social media or not?
Yeah, I did see that, yeah.
I for the life of me, so as the Sharks fullback is coming across, I think you could argue, there's two ways of looking at this. I still can't decide if it's a rugby incident, he's coming across, he's protected himself, play on. Or if you've awarded penalty yellow card, why have you not given a penalty try?
Yeah, I think that's the way most people would look at it. Yeah.
So it's one or t'other. And I genuinely actually lent more towards, didn't really think there was that much wrong. But then if you're going to go by the letter of the law and you're going to go down you've already awarded the penalty, you've already given him a yellow card, it should have been a penalty try and it should have been game over for Claremont. And it just shows how cruel the game is. And Christophe Uriel spoke after the game about, this was our game. We wanted to win this. This was going to be our jewel of the season. We knew the top 14 was nigh on finished. It's been really difficult, but loads of players back from injury. We want to finish with a splash. And we felt we could have won this competition. And they very easily could have, should have, would have won that game. And so I'm not sure where that leaves them now mentally after that game. Do you take great heart from the fact that you've just beaten half the Springbok side for 75 minutes and that you should have won that game? Or is it another one that slips and are more going to slip and where are we and how is this running going to go at the end of the season? So you feel for them because it's been a really difficult season. I caught up a little bit with Benji Kayser as well, just about the context of the season, how they've gone, and everyone's just a little bit frustrated, aren't they? And they want to turn a page and they just want next season to start already. So yeah, mate, gutted for them. It comes down to a reffing decision as well, but also top sides get into that type of lead and they either kill the game off or a side comes back, but they make sure they win. And so for Claremont, still the jury's kind of out on how they want to play, players they're going to bring in, have the coaches settled, what does it all look like? And I really didn't think, you asked me for a score last week, I thought that might have been quite comfortable for the Sharks. But it just shows, like, with the firepower they have, when they turn it on, they can still spank teams and create opportunities and they can score points. So, mate, I don't know. I don't know where it leaves them, but incredibly difficult to swallow.
And they did that without George Mwala, who pulled out late as well.
Yeah, they did it without George Mwala, but still, they managed to generate go forward. They bossed some collisions. Fritz Lee, I love watching Fritz Lee still. Hope he re-signs and plays another year. Tremendous number eight. Kremer was physical. They scrummed well. They squeaked penalties out of Oxen Shea and a Sharks pack that Eben Etzebeth and company, mate, they were good, but they just have to be consistent in their work. And when they do that, they'll be a top six side in the top 14. But yeah, they aren't settled, which is horrible. It's horrible from the outside and knowing that it could fire and it just isn't happening for them at the minute.
We will see the effect that has on them for the final few games of the top 14 season. And let's have a look ahead to this weekend's top 14 games, because Claremont are away at Perpignan, or obviously we've spoken about them, how they're rising and looking to gatecrash that top six. There were games this weekend and you sort of think, as in every weekend, you think, oh, is this going to make the picture clearer? But I'm sure we're going to go through them all here. You actually look at it and those sides that are trying to get into the top six, the ones that aren't already cemented in there, there's a lot of them that are at home that you kind of think, I suppose bonus points will come into it, but you kind of think they're probably quite likely to win. You got Perpignan against Clermont. You got Cast at home to Montpellier. I mean, Montpellier obviously fighting for their lives. And then you've got Racing at home to Bayonne. Most people would think that Racing are going to win that. And Toulon at home to Lyon. Sorry to AB, who were on last week, but they can't buy a point, let alone a win on the road. So you'd think that Toulon are going to win that. So I'm not sure if the picture is going to become any clearer come the end of the weekend, I suppose is what I'm saying. But it looks like there's some huge games.
Again, the first one you mentioned, Perpignan-Clermont. So you got Perpignan in 7th. 53 points. Clermont are down 11th with 47. It just shows how quickly the complexion could change. Clermont win that game, they essentially come up in line with 7th. But Perpignan are favourites, their form, but it's Clermont. How has that game last weekend affected them? What side are they going to stick out in Perpignan? You'd think now you would all but say they've avoided 13th spot, but do they want to assure 11th, 12th and just try and win their home games remaining? Or they say, nah, like we've got 3-4 games left, let's just go, let's try and win in Perpignan. So like all of these games count now for more because the final standing is going to be definitive very soon. Like Perpignan Clermont, I have no idea who's going to win that game, but it's going to be an absolute belter. Cast Montpellier. Montpellier are still down in 13th. They're on 39 points. Cast at home, they're currently 8th on 50 points. You win this weekend, you get a bonus point. You close down the gap on La Rochelle, who are 5th in 56 points. So, but then desperation comes in. Montpellier, what's happening? I caught up with Antoine Batut. Both of our boys were playing on Saturday in a tournament. He's now forward coach down there. He's like, it's been difficult. Like there's different egos, different things happening, different personalities. We've got outstanding individuals, but it's just not quite meshing, but we're working our backsides off, trying to find a solution. Can they go to Cast this weekend and generate something? Potentially with the stars they have, but collectively they haven't really delivered much at all. Pau, the next game, you put Pau at home to Oyonnax. Oyonnax rock bottom, clinging on for everything, but it looks like they're gone. Pau, you think with a difference in quality, they should be able to assure, they should be able to get 4 or 5 points at home to Oyonnax. Pau are currently 9th with 50. A win would lift them with a bonus point, 55 in line with Toulon, who are 6th, and then they're back scrapping in the playoff zone. They led for so long early in the season. They were 1st, 2nd, 3rd. Now back down, bouncing around in 9th, but a home weekend for them would be absolutely huge. The other one you mentioned, Racing against Bayonne. I don't know, Bayonne have just lost their last two home games, but we've spoken about it earlier in the season. Racing are up in 4th on 57 points, but is it the most intimidating place to go? No. So Bayonne will go there and they'll try and throw the ball about because they've got nothing to lose, because we're near the end of the season, because they need wins, because Bayonne now are 12th on 44, and another loss, they could be dropped down into that playoff zone. They could be leapfrogged by Montpellier if they were to get something in the road to Cast. So, mate, each one of these games is now so precious. Toulon against Lyon.
Can't really predict a Lyon win, can you, when they've got
no point? You can't. And you're going to Félix Mayol, where Toulon have found confidence and they're absolutely bouncing. And we spoke to AB last week. They can't get a win for love nor money away from home. So you have to say Toulon are favourites to win that game. They're back, they're strong, they look way more cohesive than they have in the past 2-3 months. So Toulon, you think, might cement their place in the top 6.
And then there's two huge games to finish.
These are the two. So you've got, I think Toulon are going to win at home to Lyon. That then means that they, you know, do they move ahead of La Rochelle, Racing, Bordeaux? But the two ones that are going to be absolutely massive. And like I spoke to a few of the Toulouse boys, and I reckon, and this is where it gets weird, like where you have to manage the end of their season. This is 1 versus 2. So you've got Stade Francais are currently top, Toulouse are 2nd. But I think that Toulouse might rest a couple of boys. They might put Antoine Dupont on the back burner. They might rest a couple of boys and hope they've got enough with their squad depth to get over the line and beat Stade Francais. And you don't know what side Stade Francais are going to send, but I think that's home win for Toulouse, which means they bounce up to 1st. But the biggest one this weekend is Bordeaux against La Rochelle. You've got Bordeaux, who are 3rd on 58 points. They're hosting La Rochelle, who are on 56. And every single one of these games now is huge. Bordeaux, who are flying, it comes down to selection. What side do La Rochelle send? They're out of Europe. So to my mind, with Rog, they're probably going to send their big dogs and try and upset Bordeaux. So I think that's going to be absolutely epic fixture at the weekend. But it's going to become a little bit clearer. But who's going to pick up points for Montpellier? Can they leapfrog a Bayonne side? Or can they get one win closer to Bayonne? Clermont, can they pick up something on the road to Perpignan and avoid that relegation zone? Perpignan scrapping for top 6. Like, there's all these different little mini battles that are going to be so telling come the end of the weekend. So yeah, mate, another colossal weekend. And now that Europe's finished for most sides, it's all or nothing. It's all in. And this is the type of rugby that we love. Summer is back as well. It's summer rugby this weekend. It's going to be sunny everywhere. So expect offloading, running rugby. There are some games going to be on Premier Sport as well this weekend. Viaplay, sorry, still showing the games. So if you're back in the UK and try and catch them, if not, enjoy them wherever you are, because there should be some absolute firecrackers.
You mentioned it's going to become a little bit clearer come the end of the weekend, just by the nature of the fact that there's one round fewer left to go. I'll make one prediction. It's still ain't going to be clear come the end of the weekend. It's still going to be up in the air.
It isn't going to be clearer. You're absolutely right. But no. It's the stress. Like, it's quite weird. Unless you've been through it, and I know people that from the outside, they look in and this is entertainment, right? But if you're at Montpellier, you're at Bayonne at the moment, you are stressed. That this is a horrible. Or if you're Perpignan, you're like, the opportunity. And from week to week, it's the opportunity. Are we going to get top six? And then if you beat Clermont at home, you bounce into the top six. The lift that you've got now, that drive towards the end of the season, a chance to compete for the top 14, where actually nobody saw you as having a chance of winning a Brennus at the start of the year. You were talking about relegation and staying up. So that's where all of these little emotions that come into your weekly cycles for each of these teams are so different and so telling. And the opportunity, as Rog would say, it's fucking enormous. And it is. And it's absolutely great. And that's what makes it so exciting to follow.
And just briefly before we go, I don't know whether this is just paper talk, agent talk, driving a new deal, but I was reading today, is Matthew Jalibert leaving Bordeaux in 2025? That's sort of a season ahead, but is that just his agent driving more cash?
No, I think that was a journal that asked him, have you got your future sorted out? But he's still got another season on top of this deal to run. And previously he'd been really heavily linked when Cameron Waukee left. He'd been really heavily linked with Racing. That's obviously part now because Owen Farrell's heading to Racing, so he's not going to go there. But I think it was more, somebody asked him, have you got your future? He was like, well, I've still got another year of my deal and I'm trying to focus on the end of the season. So he just kind of flat batted the question. So no, I think that was a little bit of sensational questioning from a journal who's asking something that normally you wouldn't really be thinking about for another 9-10 months, certainly till the end of this season. So I don't think he's leaving. And I think they've got quite a decent backline that he probably wants to hang around and be part of.
And one bit of fly half news that is sensational, but in the other sense of the word, Benjamin Udogie, another 1 year deal at Clermont.
104 years old he is. Tell that to his hairline. I don't know how he's still going. Ultimate competitor, super professional, good bloke as well. Yeah, apparently he's been offered another. I don't know how old Benji is. He must be 38, 39.
I think he's 30. I think he'll be 39, nearly 40 by the end of this contract. But
knocking 40, challenging Jimmy Gopper for the oldest standoff in France title. Not sure that's a title you want to be winning. But yeah, mate, he's doing good things. He's got that backline moving. We saw as well, I think it was Anthony Bello that missed a couple of penalties at the weekend that Benji probably wouldn't miss. So yeah, another year for him would be absolutely terrific if he gets it with Urios and the boys at Clermont.
Thanks, Johnny. Massive weekend of top 14 this weekend, and not long to wait till those Champions Cup and Challenge Cup finals we were talking about. A big thanks to all you guys for listening. Make sure you hit subscribe. Leave us a nice review if you can. Check us out on Rugby Pass and on YouTube. And we'll be back with another episode next week. Au revoir, Johnny.
Cheers, mate.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.